This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good afternoon. My name is Bailey Carlson, and I am the Communications Director in Governor Dugard's office. And today, also with the Governor, we have Liza Clark, who is our Commissioner of the Bureau of Finance and Management. As a reminder for those on the phones, you can mute your line by pressing *6. And you can unmute during the Q&A portion by pressing #6. Also, for those of you in the room, please remember to turn on your mics at the tables when you have a question and make sure you speak into those mics as well. And with that, I'll turn it over to Governor Dennis Dugard.
Thank you, Bailey, and thank you anyone who's on the line or present in the room today. I delivered the budget address at 1 o'clock, and of course, this is an unusual year. Since I'll be leaving office in about a month, the real budget proposal will come from the governor-elect, Kristi Noem. And so my budget is more of a informational budget, a starting point from which she can choose to base her budget or not. And yet I think it's helpful to give a sense of what we project revenue will be and what some of the statutory expenses would typically be, and so I expect that some of those items that were described in my budget will also find their way into her budget, but time will tell. So with that, I don't have any other opening comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Maybe start with in the room.
Generally a positive budget address. I think the last 2 years have been a little bit different in tone, but I think you had mentioned that there was an increased spending in the ag sector, but I guess last week the Federal Reserve out of Minneapolis said that Chapter 12 bankruptcies have been increasing in the 9th District, and so I guess how do you see the increase in ag spending, but then also the increase in bankruptcies?
How to reconcile that?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. I don't doubt that the very low commodity prices are causing some financial strain on producers, particularly those that have more modest equity, maybe haven't been in farming as long as some others maybe have, don't have the depth of financial strength that some farmers who've been in the business, particularly if they were in the business during the very strong commodity price years. So it's not surprising that you'd see some bankruptcy increases, but that doesn't mean that the overall ag sector doesn't need to continually invest in or periodically invest in new equipment or used equipment. And so we do believe there's some impact. At least one of our Council of Economic Advisors suggested there's some increased sale of used equipment inventory because some dealers want to reduce that inventory. And so we're seeing both existing farmers and particularly those that know they've got to replace some equipment in the years ahead. Some may have held off for several years, but at some point you can't hold off any longer and you need to buy some equipment. And so what I'm just reporting is the fact, and that is we're seeing a little bit more tax collection from the ag sector, and that's primarily coming from, we believe, machinery sales.
Do you see that? And I just wanted to clarify on the FY 2019 adopted versus FY 2020 recommended ongoing receipts. The plus 44.2, is that basically the increase in consumer spending and ag sector?
The 44.
For sales and use tax?
Oh, well, that's all sales and use tax.
Okay.
That's all kinds of consumer spending. You know, there'd be a little bit of ag machinery sales in there, but that's a small part of the sales. It's all kinds of things, food, clothing, equipment that any kind of consumer spending would all be in that growth. We're just seeing good consumer activity.
Governor, can you walk through your state employee health plan proposal again and talk about what is the premium going to be that you're proposing?
Sure. The premium will be $20 for the high deductible plan and $40 for the low deductible plan. to put that in some perspective, South Dakota is a large employer. We have thousands of employees. Over 90% of employers who are large scale like that. In fact, I'm counting anybody with 200 employees or better as a large employer. Over 90% of those businesses and governments have an employee participate with a premium in the employee's share of the health plan. So I'm not talking about dependents. We already charge a premium, and virtually everyone does there too. But 90% of large employers also have their employees pay a premium. It's typically something around 20%, and I think ours is going to be more like 5% of the total cost of claims. So it's very reasonable, and I don't like proposing it, but the fact is costs continue to go up, and we try to say, you know, we want our compensation to be comparable. We should also have our benefit structure be comparable to what other employers we're competing with for workers.
If you had one or two things that Governor-elect Noem incorporates into her budget proposal, what would they be?
Boy, I really don't want to give Governor-elect Noem recommendations. I've given my recommendation in general, and some of those things I imagine she'll look at and say, yes, I like that, and some things she'll say, no, I don't, and that's the governor's role. And I'm very optimistic that she's going to be a good manager of our finances and pay attention to our structural balance. And I think she's also very much wanting to retain our AAA status. And we've had more than one conversation about some of the things I mentioned in the budget speech. And I know many of those values that I hold dear, she does as well.
Try one other thing. Would you have any advice to AG-elect Roundsburg about ending presumptive probation? Is there anything you would say about that?
No, you know, I like to give advice to other elected officials face-to-face than rather through written or visual media. I think the likelihood of that advice being considered is much higher if I give it directly. Thank you for the question, though.
How closely did you, because I spoken with Governor-elect Noem earlier today, and she indicated that your administration kind of allowed her transition team in on some of the budget talks. I guess how closely did your administration and that team come up with some of those numbers?
Well, I would say it's more, I don't think we collaborated in the sense that she would say, let's do this, and I'd say, let's do that. No, it was more a matter of, and that's the nature of a brand new governor-elect. Their responsibilities are many, and the time is very short. They've got to hire a cabinet. They've got to hire staff. They've got to develop their promises on the campaign trail. They have to translate them into legislative proposals. So they really have their hands full. And so one of the things that we did was right after she was elected, then we said, here's the day. In fact, we told both candidates ahead of time, here is the day we are going to have our budget marathon, we call it, where it's the whole day. We're in going through all the agency requests. We're going through what the Bureau of Finance and Management recommends, some areas where there's some decision points. And we go through agency by agency and other spending that would be statutorily required, say K-12 or others who are not agencies, directly agencies. But and she was present in the room for that entire day, as were a number of her staff. So they were witness to the give and take, the explanation of why we think the revenue numbers are going to come in this much, why we think we shouldn't include any new sales tax from internet sales in the revenue projection for 2020, why we think we can afford this much and that much. And so they were watching all of that all the way through. And so she'll be very well versed in all those decision points. And again, I think that's why she was here for the budget address, so she could absorb more and retain more and understand better. And so that when she puts her budget together, she'll have a more comprehensive understanding of the global situation. But we really didn't get into this agency, this request. You should put that in there, Governor Dugard. No, it was more watching and absorbing and getting ready.
Can you kind of characterize for the fiscal year 2020 ongoing revenues? I think it's somewhere in the $53 million range. Can you talk about how that compares to previous years?
It's a very good year. $50 million of new expenditure growth is very good. You know, you might remember in fiscal year 17, we projected, I can't remember what we projected, but then when I came and gave my December mid-year budget address, I said, well, the revenue for FY17 is coming in worse. Well, I said this at the speech. I guess I don't need to browbeat you with it, but it came in, we projected it needed to be cut. The legislature cut it still further, and it ended up coming in still less than that. So we've had a couple of years where it's been a little bit lean, and this year is not. This year's a good, strong revenue growth year.
I guess, does that explain I don't want to call it a wish list if you don't want to, but some of the expenditures that you had kind of outlined?
Clearly, yes. For example, paying off 2 years out of our three in the Readiness Center in Rapid City. And that's something I thought last year it would take 3 years to work through our share. Again, I mentioned this, I think, to some of the legislators I talked to yesterday and today. South Dakota, because we run our budget well, we benefit from the fact that some other states don't. I'll give you an example. When the federal highway bill comes out, and they have a formula that allocates a certain amount of money to South Dakota, we have to match it. They're giving us 80% in some cases. They're giving us 90% in some cases. But we've got to come up with the 20 and with the 10 and match it. Well, some states can't come up with all the money that they need to match to qualify for all the federal funds. So they get, at the end of the year, they haven't, Illinois or Connecticut, I'm going to guess they might be a couple of the states like that. They can't take all the federal funds that are allocated to them because they can't provide the match. So the federal government reallocates to those who can. So we get millions of dollars that really should go to other states. And the Readiness Center is sort of like that. In the military construction world, every year Congress appropriates a certain amount of money for military construction, including construction at National Guard facilities. And we really should have been several years from now at being in line for military construction. But again, some states whose turn it was, I'll call it that way, they couldn't take their turn because they couldn't match the federal grant. So we got a chance to jump to the front of the line last year, and I said, we're going to take that, and we'll have to come up with our match over 3 years because we're a little bit short, but we're not as short as some other states. We were, pinching our pennies. So they don't have any pennies. So I was pleased this year we're able to say, one recommendation is just pay off years two and three of our plan in one fell swoop. The same thing is true, last year and the year before, and I think even the year before that, the Department of Corrections was saying, waving the flag about the Jameson healthcare straining at the seams and the inadequacy of it. And we just didn't have the money to spend on it. And now this year, because of our strong revenue growth, because we had a budget surplus at the year end, and that ended up putting some money in the reserves, and we don't need all of it there to keep our 10%. So let's scoop that out. Let's take advantage of lower expenses. We've got a chunk of money here. Let's spend some of it on that Jameson healthcare facility. So yes, clearly because revenue's strong, these are the things we can do. And in years past, when we've had really strong surpluses or strong budget years, we've taken one-time money and paid off debt. and I recited that a couple times, we paid off $40 and $50 million worth of debt early. So, again, taking those one-time things rather than some states build that into their ongoing expenses. Hey, let's take this money and start a new program. Well, what are you going to do next year? So I say, take that one-time money and buy a thing or pay off a debt or endow a program. That's a more responsible way.
We'll take this moment here to turn to the phones if there's anyone on the phones that have a question.
Hey, Governor, this is Seth Tupper at the Rapid City Journal.
Yes, Seth.
Hey, just continuing along that list of things you wanted, the adjustments you wanted to make to this year's budget, you mentioned the metrology lab in Sturgis. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what that is and the need for that expenditure?
Yeah, a metrology lab is a lab that validates the equipment we use to in turn measure things that must meet certain state standards. So, for example, our scales that measure the weight of grain or the weight of trucks or our equipment that validates the octane rating of gasoline, those kinds of measuring devices, the citizens depend upon the state to check those who use measuring devices and pay money or don't pay money, don't pay fines because they're compliant. And our metrology lab is in a facility here in Pierre. I think it's in Pierre here, isn't it, Liza? Yeah. And we've been kind of, it's sort of like the Jameson healthcare thing. We've been limping along, and the agency that in turn checks us and makes sure that we have facilities so that our lab is reliable in its own testing of those kinds of measurement equipment. They told us 2 years ago, hey, you can't use this lab anymore. We're not going to certify you anymore. And we said, oh, please, we'll fix it up. We've got another building we're going to fix up. And they said, okay, we'll give you one more year while you get that arranged. Well, then that deal fell through. So a year later, I didn't have appropriation authority to do anything beyond what was approved. That fell through. So now we've gone back to them and said, gosh, give us one more year and we'll get still another thing. And now, so we're really on the edge of not being certified anymore. And some states aren't certified, but then they have to take their equipment to other states. And then you get behind the in-state equipment people. And so you can't really rely on that as well as you can your own equipment. So we want to take a building in Sturgis that we already have. Is that a DOT building? Yes, Liza's nodding. It's a DOT building, and remodel that and turn it into a lab that will meet the certifying agency's standards.
So the lab, in effect, will move from Pierre to Sturgis. Is there any, anybody have any qualms about moving that?
No, and in fact, we have good, don't we have some, I think we have some staff that would rather be in Rapid City that would run the metrology lab there. I should have said Sturgis.
Any other questions from those on the phones? Okay, then we'll turn it back to the room.
All good? All right. Well, thank you, everyone.